You're listening to Get Your Film Fix Podcast.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm pumped. Let's let the healing begin.
God help you if you use voiceover in your work, my friends. God help you. It's flaccid, sloppy writing.
I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie everyone's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie, you know? The guy you're not sure whether or not you like yet.
All right, hello and welcome to this edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. Like the Muppets, we got the original band together here on this edition. It's Jeremy Lee and Brantley back again, the original Get Your Film Fix podcast crew. I feel like for the past, like, you know, few months, we've always been missing a piece. We've always had, had to have one of our other gracious writers fill in for us, because we've all been very busy lately. You know, Jeremy and Lee, you guys are both working on movies. Lee got married. Jeremy's been doing, like, the Patriots games, too, and stuff. So, got the original band together, just like the Muppets. And on this edition, we're reviewing the Muppets with Jason Segel. New one just came into theaters. We're then going to take a look at Jason Segel's career and kind of how it's evolved and what he's been able to do with the opportunities he's had. Lee's then going to give us a little mini-review of The Descendants. And then we're going to top it all off with our top five musicals.
We're trying to get the old gang back together again.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Your fans never left you. The world hasn't forgotten.
Sure, it's impossible, but we've got to try. It's time to play the music.
It's time to light the lights.
It's time to meet the Muppets.
Yes! Come on, guys, let's go!
I can't believe we're all back together.
Yeah!
Sorry, I'm super excited.
The Muppets have always been about artistic integrity, not cheap tricks.
Check it out. Fart shoes.
This is going to be a really short movie.
All right, guys, so this week we went and saw The Muppets, the latest from The Muppets. So, this movie was very aware of the fact that it's been a while since the Muppets had really made anything. And this movie was also very aware that it was making a movie. Did you guys find that this film's total self-awareness was distracting? Or did you go with it and did you find it cute and humorous?
I mean, I found it cute and humorous. You know, I mean, I'm not really so much taken out of films all the time when they do that, and as long as it's working with the film and the jokes are working, I can go with it. And I kind of liked how they did it. I really liked probably the first time – well, maybe not the first time they did it, but one of the first times they did it with Tex Richmond, the oil baron, and he's talking to the two older Muppets, you know, the ones who don't really like the other Muppets. And they're explaining how the contract works, and one of them says, "If I didn't know any better, I'd say you just reveal the, you know, important plot point of the movie," or something like that. And I mean, I don't know, I laughed, I thought it was funny. So, I mean, I think all of it worked within the film. So, I liked it. I thought it kind of worked well.
Yeah, I liked. I liked the self-awareness aspect of it, but I didn't. I was kind of disappointed, I guess would be the word, that the movie they decided to make was like about the Muppets deciding to make another movie,
or,
you know what I mean,
or
like
a show, or the show.
Right, exactly. Like I just thought that was kind of like a waste of an opportunity in many senses, and that like I thought that it didn't really utilize a lot of what the Muppets have going for them. Like we saw a lot of Kermit, we saw a lot of Fozzie, a lot of Miss Piggy, and then a couple others, but there were a lot of Muppets that weren't really utilized, and I don't know, I just think that, like, a lot of times the way that the Muppet movies have been composed, you get a lot more from them. Instead, you kind of have, like, this reunion thing that's being put together with, obviously, the additional story of Jason Segel, Amy Adams, and his brother Walter, which I think was, you know, fine, but I just feel like it was in many instances a missed opportunity.
I totally agree with that, Lee. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. I had fun watching it, even though I watched it on. I was in Vermont when I watched it, and we watched it in a little movie theater, and the had to been the worst projection I've ever seen in my life. The whole thing was skewed to the left in an angle, and it wasn't centered onto the screen correctly, so there was about 3 feet of black on the right. It was really frustrating as far as that's concerned, but nobody else in the audience seemed to notice.
not necessarily care. They didn't notice.
No, they didn't notice. But I agree. I think the self-awareness was funny at first, but it was like, okay, I get it. Let's move on to the next thing. Let's start this movie. And it was sort of a waste watching this whole... Like, I wanted, in a weird way, I wanted to see the movie start from kind of where this movie left off. And once they've gotten a little bit settled, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the Muppets are more fun to watch doing an actual story rather than them being aware that they're Muppets and aware that they're making a show and doing, you know, doing this movie and wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience every 3 minutes. I enjoy just throwing the Muppets into an actual story and watching them act it out and, you know, with their humor and their quirkiness. To me, that's much more enjoyable. Not that I didn't like this movie, but I just would have rather have seen actually a straightforward story with the Muppets.
You know, I think there actually is a good deal of story here, and I think maybe it's lost in the, you know, the musical bits and kind of the silly playfulness of it, but I actually think that there is quite a bit of a story to it, and I think Jason Segel, you know, when he was putting this movie together, was trying to make a Muppets movie work in kind of our more modern day, where, you know, he's just trying to say that, you know, no one's as big on the Muppets as they used to be, and so he's trying to find a way to create a story through that, and I actually think it worked pretty well. Now, I don't think there's necessarily, you know, a huge amount of story, and it's not like, you know, really, you know... Not engrossing, because it isn't. I did find it engrossing, but it's not like, you know, like a huge story with many twists and turns with it. But I think that the story actually works for the film. So I wouldn't say that there's necessarily like a lack of story to it. I actually think that, you know, that fight for redemption, that fight to you know, get back into the spotlight is something that works really well for the Muppets.
Yeah, I'm not saying there wasn't any story in it, but what I'm saying is, to me, I prefer to watch the Muppets do sort of like a Muppets Christmas Carol, where they're doing like a Dickens story, or they're doing where they just literally are it's weird to say, but are committed to that story rather than making a movie about the Muppets, where Kermit's called Kermit and Miss Pig, you know, and they're very aware that they're this sort of American cultural, you know, that they're American cultural icons within the context of their story. I didn't want them to be aware of that. I just wanted to watch them do a movie.
Here's where I think, well, this is kind of where I agree and in some parts disagree with you, Brantley, is that the best part of the story, or at least what it had going for it, I think was kind of the juxtaposition between Jason Segel and Amy Adams' relationship with Kermit and Miss Piggy's. Like, there was a very clear contrast between the two, and then it's almost as if this movie ran out of time. It wasn't a long movie, but it also wasn't really short, but it felt like it ran out of time, and a lot of like loose ends really needed to be tied up, and they kind of create this tension and like this obviousness of where like someone's priorities lie, like where Jason Segel's priorities lie and where Kermit's priorities lie and how that affects their relationships with the women in their lives, both were resolved like really quickly and almost unemotionally, and I think that's kind of where it got lost a little bit. And the same could be said with the way that Gary's relationship with his brother Walter, compared to Kermit and his relationship with Fozzie, and you know, it's all kind of like these very obvious contrasts were being set up, and then it was like the movie ran out of time. And I know this was very intentional at the end, and it stuck with the self-aware aspect of the movie. But when Chris Cooper goes, like, all of a sudden, like, they just decide, he has a change of heart, and they just kind of come out and say it, it was kind of, you know, an example of how this movie had to tie everything up really quickly. And like I said, I know they did that very intentionally. Like, I bet the plan all along was for him to just come out at the end and be like, oh, I'm a good guy now, and I'm just going to give back the studios.
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
But it's almost like, but it's almost like, you know, they just ran out of time.
Well, Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I would agree that things definitely wrap up quickly at the end. Even the, you know, problems that, with Jason Segel and Amy Adams and stuff, but I would not say necessarily that it's unemotional, like you said about them. I think actually throughout the whole film, you're seeing Amy Adams kind of suffering because she's not getting the, amount of attention for their relationship. It's their 10-year anniversary, and obviously, you know, it's a movie about the Muppets, so, like, the whole movie's focusing on the Muppets, and you can tell she's obviously very upset throughout the entire movie. And I don't think they're mending their relationship is unemotional either. And also, the thing you talk about at the end, getting the theater back, I don't think the theater thing was necessarily the biggest point of the movie. I think the point of the movie was making the Muppets a part of our American pop culture again, because they'd fallen out of the spotlight so far that, you know, it wasn't just about, like, necessarily getting the studio back, which obviously that happens at the end. They do, like, the little newsreel thing that says why. I think it was more about, you know, getting people to care about the Muppets again, because, you know, and I think that was probably Jason Segel's point throughout the film, because, you know, he's a big Muppets fan. He has been for forever. And I think he, you know, kind of knows that, you know, he probably has, like, this kind of obsession with them, or the rest of pop culture, the rest of, you know, American culture maybe doesn't. And so I think that was more the redeeming quality for the Muppets within the film was becoming something that American culture cared about again.
I couldn't agree more, Brantley. I mean, I think this one of the problems with this movie is this whole movie was a setup, not for another movie, but this whole movie was a setup for the Muppets to make a comeback. And that's where I kind of had a problem with it, because the plot points sort of got repetitive. Like, it's fun to see these characters that we knew from, you know, back in the day get introduced, but then that plot point seemed to happen a lot. And the idea that they're, you know, that they're desperately trying to get this, you know, money goal, which in reality is just this sort of, enough eyeballs on the Muppets, you know, to warrant them continuing on. That plot point sort of went over and over again. And I feel like it was, like Lee had said at the beginning, it was kind of a waste of a Muppet movie, because the whole film was this, like, you know, 90-minute sort of, infomercial to say the Muppets are back. And I would rather see the Muppets back doing a Muppet movie than have a whole film tell me, hey, look how great the Muppets are. I already know how great the Muppets are. That's why I went to see them.
Well, I mean, I can understand your point, and I think the film can, you know, definitely be viewed that way. But I don't think it's necessarily as, what's the word? You know, intentionally, like, oh, hey, we want to sell some more Muppet stuff. I think they were trying to create a story that worked for the time that it was. You know?
I agree, Brantley, and I don't think they're doing it to try and sell, like, merchandise.
Merchandise. No, you said, you know, it's just for the Muppets, and to say, hey, we're the Muppets and we're back, you know?
Yeah, they're showcasing the Muppet name again is what this whole movie really does. And you know, I admire Jason Segel because, you know, he's trying basically to reinvent something that, you know, has been, I guess, out of the spotlight for a while, and something that he cares about and that he loves and, you know, that a lot of people care about and a lot of people love. And he didn't do a bad job of that. I just think that this, if you're going to make them, like, ideally, if you know, if it was, in my mind, the perfect, you know, new Muppet movie, wouldn't it be as self-serving? It would be an actual Muppet adventure in and of itself without, again, the self-serving aspect of this film. And I don't want to sound like I didn't like this movie, because I did, and I did like, you know, to a point, I liked the self-referential aspects of it and, you know, how it was having fun with itself as a film and with its characters as icons. But after a certain point, I wanted it to sort of move on and go to that next level that it never did.
No. He'll kill you. Like, really kill you? But I have a surprise for you.
Wait, what?
We're going to take a quick break. Tonight we have a special guest from the mainland singing a song from his Dracula musical. Please welcome to the stage, Mr. Peter Bredder.
Thank you.
You know, I could play something else. I just think out of context this might be...
Dracula musical!
Thank you.
Too long to believe that the tide's going to turn. And I've been living too hard to believe things are going to get easier now. I'm still trying to shake off the pain from the lessons I've learned. And if I see Van Helsing, I swear to the Lord I will slay him. Ha 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 ha! He'd take it from me, but I swear I won't let it be so. Ha 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 ha! Blood will run down his face when he is decapitated. His head on my mantle is how I will let this world know how much I love you.
All right, so I've been saying for a while now that Jason Segel is one of the most talented people working right now, and I say that just because, you know, you look at movies like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where, you know, he's obviously funny in it, his performance is fine, but just kind of like the character he creates is multi-talented, and it shows that he's multi-talented. And now he comes out with The Muppets, and, you know, I just feel like he's doing a lot of different things. And I've also kind of said that his doing How I Met Your Mother, while I really like that show and I like him in it, is holding him back a little bit. I look at Jason Segel as the type of person who could, you know, be hosting award shows now. And I'm not saying that he should be doing this instead of this, but I just look at him as he could be a really big name because he's so talented in so many different areas. And I'm just wondering what you guys think of, like, how his career is going. Like, obviously he's been around for a while, but he's becoming bigger now partly with the movies that he's making. But I feel like just what he's capable of has not yet reached its pinnacle.
Well, I think his career trajectory has been awesome. I mean, I think he comes out of sort of the Apatow gang, and of all those guys who are all very talented and all very funny, Jason Segel's the one that's doing what he... in a way that he wants to do. He can be the next Judd Apatow if he really wants to. He's the one that's, you know, creating his own opportunities by, you know, making movies like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, making movies like The Muppets, which is a huge, huge franchise and that he just fell in love with and that he pushed to, you know, get greenlit. And I don't think and then he's on How I Met Your Mother, which is, you know, if you're going to be on a, you know, traditional sitcom show, why not be on probably the best traditional sitcom comedy show out there right now? And he is on that. I think He knows what he's doing. He's still able, even with, you know, whatever his schedule is at How I Met Your Mother, he's still able to do his own projects and sort of be an auteur, a comedy auteur, the likes we haven't seen out of any other of those Judd Apatow gang.
Yeah, no, I mean, I basically agree with you guys kind of wholeheartedly. I think Jason Segel has been doing phenomenal stuff. I feel like he's really been able to stick to his guns. I mean, Lee, you know, you mentioned, like, you know, coming out of the Apatow camp and everything. And you look at some of the other people that have come out of there, and I think, you know, you look at, say, wow, I'm...
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen, thank you. Wow, God, why was I just blanking on his name? You look at Seth Rogen, and, I mean, he did a couple movies that were, you know, funny and good, but then you look at him, and I think the majority of those were Judd Apatow movies.
Right, and he and didn't write kinda, them, you know?
Yeah, and then he's doing kind of his own, then he's doing these, you know, other movies. Like, Pineapple Express was good, but, you know, you look at other movies that he's been in, like, you know, Green Hornet and other stuff like that, and it's just, it's not... You know, it's not nearly as good as what he was doing with Apatow, but you look at what Jason Segel's doing away from Judd Apatow, you know, whether it's The Muppets, whether it's How I Met Your Mother, whether it's Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and those still continue to be great, you know, movies that he's involved in. So I feel like he's really been able to stick to his kind of guns about, you know, doing the type of movies he wants to do and the comedy he wants to do, and it's really working out for him. And then with Lee, you had mentioned how you feel like How I Met Your Mother is holding him back. I know in interviews before he said that he's planning on finishing after 7 seasons when his contract's up to leave How I Met Your Mother. So, I mean, maybe that'll change. Maybe they'll offer him just a bajillion dollars and he'll be like, oh, okay, I'll keep doing it. But I know that was kind of what he said in interviews before, that he is planning on leaving once his contract's up.
I just think when it comes to How I Met Your Mother, like, I really like that show, and it's mm-hmm. and I think he's great in it. So, and Jeremy, you're right. If you're going to do a show, why not do How I Met Your Mother? Why not do one of the better ones that's on right now? And I think that's fine. And I don't want to say it's like holding him back in the sense that, you know, it takes up too much of his time. I just think, like, I want to see something else from him. Like, I've seen 7 seasons or whatever it is, 6 seasons of you know, Jason Segel on How I Met Your Mother. Like, that, to a point that, you know, while it's still funny, to a point it's been exhausted. And I want to see more from him. I want to see new things from him. And the funny thing about How I Met Your Mother is that Neil Patrick Harris kind of also has this multi-talented way about him, and he's kind of utilized that only in the sense of, like, funny cameos, you know what I mean? And Jason Segel has gone above and beyond that, and I just want to see more and more of it. And I think, you know, if How I Met Your Mother ends or if he gets off that, that's what we're going to get. We're going to get a lot more of movies like The Muppets or movies like Forgetting Sarah Marshall or even another show like How I Met Your Mother or something new and unique, you know?
Well, I think this is where the difference is, Lee, where you're sort of tripping up on this difference. How I Met Your Mother, Jason Segel is not, you know, the writer, the director. He's just one of the actors, one of the, you know, 4 main actors. And although he's great in it and it's funny, you know, and I know that Jason Segel can be that, you know, writer, director, actor,
right,
star, you know, singer, that he just can't showcase on How I Met Your Mother. How I Met Your Mother is bigger than Jason Segel in a
right.
way. He's just adding his talents to that, whereas we want to see him do more Forgetting Sarah Marshall's, and he's actually written a screenplay that he's starring in called The 5-Year Engagement with Emily Blunt. So that is coming out in 2012, so maybe that'll be another sort of...
Speaking of cameos in The Muppets, that was
clever. There's a lot of little clever cameos in The Muppets.
Sorry to bother you, I'm Matt King. Yeah, I've come to pick up my daughter, Alexandra.
Alex?
Yes? What's up, Dad? What's happening?
You need to come home and see your mom. I'm the backup parent, the understudy. I thought you were supposed to be getting your act together.
I've been doing really well, actually. Nobody ever seems to notice that.
And with Elizabeth, my wife, in the hospital, my daughter's attesting me.
Look who's here. Get out of my underwear, you freak.
Oh, okay.
Don't
back inside now.
Well, this is not really a blockbuster mini review. Indie Lee's mini review.
Well, it's not really an indie though either. I mean, yeah, it's Dr. Payne, it's George Clooney, there's been tons of marketing for it.
Yeah, the Descendants. Right.
So the Descendants.
Lee's mid-film review.
Probably the movie we should have reviewed on this podcast, but that's all right.
Indeed it was. Anyway, so the Descendants, obviously, I've really been looking forward to. I'm a big Alexander Payne fan, pretty much solely because of Sideways. I like About Schmidt, I like Election, but Sideways is one of my favorite movies ever. The Descendants obviously was only released on, I believe, like 27 screens last week, opened a little bit wider this week. I planned on seeing it around 7 o'clock last night, but show was sold out. So I went at 9 o'clock, and that show was also sold out. I mean, I went, but it was also sold out. So a lot of people going to see this movie, which kind of surprised me. But either way, they were rewarded for it. I mean, this is a great movie. I don't know if it's – I don't think it's the best movie I've seen this year. I think I like Moneyball better. But regardless, I mean, Alexander Payne did so many things right with this movie. And it's the kind of movie where you could do a lot of things wrong, or you could just – leave it as it is, and it could just be another middle-of-the-road type of movie, type of family drama. But he just, like, the way Alexander Payne can make the unfunny funny is showcased perfectly here. I mean, you take a shot of a comatose woman in this movie, and you can laugh at it and not feel bad about yourself. Like, somehow he manages to just compose shots that work. Like, you look at Sideways, so to compare it to something you guys have both seen. When they crash Miles' car into the ditch, they plan on running into the tree, and it's just this wide shot of the car, like, rolling into a ditch. It's just very simple, but it's very direct, and he just does a lot of that. And you've seen the shot in the trailer of George Clooney just, like, running around the corner. It's just a wide shot, simple and direct. And, like, the simple question of, like, why doesn't he just drive where he's going isn't, like, they're aware of that. And it's almost, it's not self-aware in the sense that the Muppets are, but they're just aware of how direct a shot he's doing, and it works. And that's just kind of what makes his movie so funny. And added on top of that, The Descendants is kind of a real downer. Like, it's a sad movie. But there's a lot of humor in it. Ultimately, however, what Alexander Payne did so well in this movie, and I think he deserves a lot of credit, and this movie deserves a lot of credit because it's something that's really hard to do, is he makes the audience, or at least I felt this way, I shouldn't really speak for everybody, but I was able to prioritize the aspects of this film the way that the characters do and should, if that makes sense, and I can elaborate on it a little bit. I won't spoil anything because these three aspects are, well, one of them's not really a spoiler, but the other ones are given away in the trailer. So the three aspects of this movie are, George Clooney's wife is dying, and he has to take care of his two daughters, and he's never really done that before. So there is that aspect, dealing with his family, dealing with his dying wife, and all of that there. That's the most important aspect of this movie that he prioritizes and that we prioritize. Past that, he finds out that his wife is cheating on him, and then he wants to find out who his wife was cheating on with. So there's a search there. While that's happening, we're very interested in him finding that person, but we're never forgetting, like he never forgets, that his wife is dying and that he needs to take care of his family and keep his family together. You following me so far?
Yep.
The last thing is this big land deal that he has going on. That's also interesting, but it's very clearly like a third aspect of what's going on, and we kind of put it on the back burner while these more important things are happening, and once those are resolved, then we become interested in that land deal again. Anyway, to wrap it up, basically everything in this movie is prioritized for the characters, and the audience prioritizes it the same way, and it comes from caring about the characters. The characters in this movie are really good. The main performances are really good. There's some secondary performances that are, you know, pretty weak, but they don't ever hurt the movie. They're small enough roles. Ultimately, though, like, George Clooney is great in this movie. The two girls that play his daughters are very good. There's a kid that plays Sid. I don't know what his name is, but he has a few moments where it shows he's not a great actor, but ultimately, like, he pulls it off pretty well. And it just really works. The characters in this movie just really allow the audience to get attached to them, and it becomes a movie that you can, you know, laugh and cry over, and it's a great movie all the way through. You guys missed out.
Well, I probably will end up going to see it because that's such a glowing review. But I have a question for you. You say that he makes you care about the characters, and I heard that this is sort of his most mature, Alexander Payne's most mature film, and a film that he doesn't. There's no judgment on his characters, where people feel like, and I don't totally agree with this, but people feel like he judges a lot of his characters in movies like Election and Sideways, and he sort of has the audience, you know, mocking them and laughing at them, while in this movie, he's, I guess, judgment-free, despite the characters having major flaws. Did you find that to be truly, or...?
Not at all, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, he casts George Clooney gets a lot of crap from people.
Right, but as a filmmaker, though, as a filmmaker, is he judging him?
Well, yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, through the other characters, he judges the decisions that the characters have made in the past. And, you know, sometimes they're justified and other times they're not, and that's just part of the drama of the movie. But, you know, Robert Forster plays George Clooney's father-in-law, and I think that character in particular is kind of the voice of Alexander judging the decisions that Clooney has made in his life, and like how they've ended up where they are. And
anyway, George Clooney has a big extended family, and he's doing this land with all his cousins, and also, and through them, there's a lot of judgment passed on his character and the decisions he's made, and you know, the flaws within the family in general. Like, much of the movie is about trying to reconnect with his daughters and, you know, dealing with the situation with his wife. And just through that, you know, a lot comes out. You know, I don't think he's as harsh on his characters as he is to, like, Miles and Sideways. Like, I mean, it's a very different kind of character in that sense. Like, Miles is, you know, kind of a sad sack. You know, it makes it very easy to judge. Whereas Clooney, you know, is really rich and he's, you know, has pretty much anything he wants. He just kind of has family issues that he's never had to deal with.
How is Clooney in this film? Are you able to buy him as this?
Yeah, sold. You don't think about him as George Clooney at all, for a second even. I think George Clooney is a really good actor. I understand, you know, that he's George Clooney. It's, you know, he's always George Clooney. He was great in this movie, I think. So.
How about, it's good to see Robert Forster getting another role, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was really good. He plays a very big part in this movie while not, without a lot of screen time. Like I said, he kind of is the voice of Alexander Payne judging the other characters in the movie, and one scene in particular at the end where it becomes very obvious. You could argue that it's a little bit too on the nose. In fact, the like old lady sitting behind me, it was the point when the old lady sitting behind me were like, oh, I see what he's doing, you know what I mean?
Like, really?
Like, but you know, it did not work. It just was a little obvious, but yeah, Robert Forster was really good.
It's interesting to see Matthew Lillard get another role, too. I feel like I've never seen him.
He was really good, too. He was
really?
And that, he had a tough role to pull off, too. Of everybody that kind of had, like, a cliche role, perhaps, that they had to handle, he managed it not to be cliche, and it was he actually really pulled it off. When I saw – you first see that who his character is on, like, a picture because he's a real estate agent – and when I saw that it was him, I was like, oh, no, I don't know how he's going to pull that off. I've seen him a little bit over the top before in Scream. But, you know, he was really good, actually. I liked him a lot. All right, so that's it. That's The Descendants. Definitely check it out. One of the best movies of the year so far. It's not Sideways, although Sideways grew on me over time, so we'll see.
Descendants.
I don't know what that was.
That was Jeremy. Jeremy just acts like that. Sometimes you have to just take it in stride.
I know it was Jeremy. I just didn't understand what he was trying to do, right?
Movies.
Text message. Movies.
All right, so we had a little bit of a time trying to figure out what we wanted to do for our top five, but we eventually settled on top five musicals.
Movie musicals.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is only a movie podcast, so...
Broadway shows.
God forbid.
Wicked.
We meant Broadway musicals that hadn't made it to film yet. Anyway.
Oh, that would be a good top five.
Broadway musicals. We'd have to go see a lot more.
That haven't made it to film
yet. That would be an expensive top five to do, because, like, just to go see five musicals...
But what could help us do that is donations at getyourfilmfix.com.
You're right, but I don't think they'd want their donations to go to us going to New York to see Broadway musicals.
If it would influence one top five, then I think they would.
All right, well, so with that in mind, that we're doing top five musicals, I'm going to kick it over to Lee. Lee, give us your criteria and then your number five.
All right, I didn't have a whole lot of criteria other than there had to be songs sung in it. I wanted to go a little bit off the beaten path here. I didn't do Wizard of Oz, Sound of Music. You know, while those are great, and they may or may not have made my top five otherwise, but I tried to veer off there, those big obvious ones a little bit. With that, my number five is on here, definitely a real personal pick for me. Is it really always really related? I really related to the movie. It's Hustle and Flow.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. So you're
doing hard, it's hard out here for a pimp, you know, and I understand that.
I got you. So you're doing like movies that like have music, but aren't necessarily considered like musicals.
Yeah, they don't. Well, they sing in the movie.
Yeah, but like you
They don't like break into song randomly necessarily. They're, you know.
No.
I have a little of both.
Well, yeah, he's singing because like he's in a recording studio singing for like his soundtrack. I get that. I'm just saying. Okay, I just want.
I think it works.
Fit your criteria.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little of both. There's the two kinds of musicals. There's the ones where they like randomly break into song, you know, like totally out of the reality of life. And then there's the kind where it just fits into the reality of life, and I have both. So there we go.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have added that to my criteria, because there is definitely a distinction between the two.
Yeah.
All right, my number five. I pretty much did the same thing as Leah. I tried to stay away from the more obvious ones, but that, you know, didn't always happen. I didn't have Hustle and Flow, unfortunately. That was a good pick. But my number five is also sort of a personal one, just because I watched it a lot when I was a kid. I probably haven't seen it in 15 years. Nor do I really remember it all that much, but it is called The Unsinkable Molly Brown. It's a musical.
That's a musical?
Yes, it is.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. I used to really like this when I was a kid, and I would love to revisit it and see how it holds up.
I mean, I'm just curious, like, why you're watching this movie as a kid. I mean, is it about the woman on the Titanic?
Yes, it is.
That just seems a little heavy for a
No, it's that part.
Boy.
That part's only at the very beginning.
Oh.
That's the Titanic. And then she survives
She died early. Oh, no, sorry.
She does survive
I didn't know
it.
She survived.
Yeah.
Because no, she's
unsinkable. She survives it, and then she goes and she gets married, and then she gets rich, and then poor again, and they sing all about it. This thing all about the whole thing.
They sing about being rich and then
being
poor.
And I think that they sing about Oklahoma in there too at some point.
Cool.
All right.
So, my number five, I also, like these guys, didn't do any of like, the classical musicals, mostly because I don't really like musicals. Musicals are probably my least favorite genre of music.
Ooh, it's so manly, Brantley.
No, they just are.
I like gangsta movies.
Yeah, you know, all right. But no, that being said, all my picks are like full on actual musicals. And they're more like my favorites, not necessarily what I think are like the best. I'd say my favorite like classical musical.
We know that your favorites aren't the best.
No. I'd say that my favorite classical musical is probably The West Side Story, but you also won't see that on my list even because this is all
hate that movie.
You hate The West Side Story?
Yeah, I just...
I hate most Al Roker musicals except...
I'm not a huge fan of West Side Story either.
Yeah. Anyway, well... My number five is Cannibal, the musical. I'm not sure if you guys are know much about the movie. It's Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's probably the first feature-length film that they did. It was released by Troma Studios, and it tells the story of Alfred Packer, who was like a mountain guide in the 1800s, and he was like the sole survivor of like his mountain party, and so they got lost in the winter, and so he was accused and convicted of eating the other travelers on his on his guiding tour that he was doing. So hence the name Cannibal the Musical. It's a pretty funny film.
Interesting.
It's like it was legit shot on like home like video, like probably on like a VHS tape. I'm not sure, but like I mean this was early 90s, keep in mind, like home video. So it looks terrible, but it is pretty funny. And Trey Parker plays Alfred Packer as well.
All right, we got some interesting number fives there. My number four is a very popular musical. Definitely kind of just they go into song and dance a lot in this movie. It is Grease.
Yeah, honorable mention.
Yeah, I thought about including that one, but it didn't make my list.
Made mine.
Good job.
Apparently. All right, my number four, in honor of our movie we reviewed today, I'm going to go with my favorite Muppet movie. It's The Muppet Christmas Carol. Some great original songs in that I, you know, sing every holiday to myself.
Awesome. I thought about an honorable mention for me, and Jeremy, we've had this argument before about which Muppet Christmas movie is better. I had Muppet Family Christmas as an honorable mention.
There you go.
Which has doesn't have the original songs, but it has the Muppets... has the Muppets singing Christmas music, which everybody loves.
Everyone likes that, with Bob Denver.
Interesting thing about Muppet Family Christmas is that is one where they're all playing themselves, similar to this new Muppets movie. So it's self-aware in that sense. But I like that one a lot.
Interesting. Are we on mine?
Okay. Very family-oriented.
So my number four is probably the most like classic musical I have on here, and that is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Ah, you bastard!
Number four for me. Why is that like on your list too?
It's my number three.
Oh, I jumped the gun on you. Well, looks like you raged a little bit higher than I do.
It's a good pick.
Yeah,
that one's obviously.
I like this one in terms of musicals simply because I feel like it's got a pretty awesome story to go along with all the singing and dancing that the characters do.
Gene Wilder, come on.
And Gene Wilder, movie. I mean, so seriously. Good. He's awesome. I remember the first time we were watching, he didn't know, like, you know, he had that ability to look like he was going to fly off the handle at any second while, like, smiling. And so it's like that uncomfortableness where you're like, oh, he's smiling, but I feel like he could, like, flip out on this kid at any moment while he's doing so. So, no, he was great.
All right, that's my number three.
Boom.
My number three is a more recent musical that has grown on me. I've always loved the music. I liked the music before the musical, okay? I want to put that out there now. And it is Once.
Oh, damn it. Interesting
so
pick.
Interesting pick.
I didn't even just think pick. About it.
I thought about it. I didn't include it.
Totally didn't even think of that one.
Yeah,
I always liked the music, his songs. And then when that came out, I think they did a really good job, especially for the type of low-budget look it was.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Cool. All right. My number three is another classic musical, although more modern classic, and that is the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I've never seen it.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I love this movie. Very good. I used to go to the in Keene at the Colonial Theater. They would have around Halloween time, they'd have like the people who would come up and do like the revival thing. So it was like a sing along with it and everything, and that was a lot of fun.
Interesting. I think I went to see one movie at the Colonial in Keene.
Oh, really? It's a nice.
I don't even remember what it was actually. All right, my number two. Coincidentally, I noticed on IMDb today there is a release of a trailer for this movie being re-released in 3D, which they seem to be doing a lot of, much to my chagrin.
Hmm.
But it is Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast.
I should have had you sing that song at my wedding.
Yeah.
Pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Thank you.
All right. You're up, Jeremy.
All right, my number two. It's been taken by both of you. It's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Those Oompa Loompas knew how to sing.
Yep.
Oompa Loompa, Oompa Doo.
Something you did was wrong right now. Boom.
Oh, you killed it. You were going somewhere. Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Okay. We're on twos, right? Okay. So... my number two is another Trey Parker and Matt Stone collaboration. It is Team America World Police.
That's a movie I need to see.
Wait, you haven't seen it?
I have not seen it.
I don't know if I've ever seen all of it. I've seen most of it.
Jeremy, man, you should definitely check that movie out. It is hilarious.
I just think it's funny that we're doing top five musicals of all time. Obviously, we've all kind of avoided the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But top five musicals of all time, and Brentley has two Trey Parker movies.
I do. But I told you guys, I don't like musicals. Like, all these classics, like Singing in the Rain, like, do nothing for me.
I don't like Singing in the Rain either. I never like Singing in the Rain either.
Yeah, and that's like the penultimate, you know, musical, and I'm like, ugh, no thank you. Or Sound of Music, you know.
Singing in the Rain is a really good movie. I just don't like the musical numbers in it. They're really awkward, and, like, I don't know, they're just not good songs. The movie itself is really interesting.
But wait, Lee, I also like how you're passing judgment on my top five list, and you haven't seen the whole Team America World Police. You've only seen parts of it.
Yeah, I stopped watching it for a reason.
Well, I'll tell you what. Once you see the whole movie, then you can start to pass judgment, sir. Good day.
Bless you. All right, my number one.
Your number one.
Is a movie that I think... the Muppets kind of played off of a little bit in this most recent film. I'm not sure if you guys noticed or agree with me, but it's the Blues Brothers.
Well, I heard about the fella you've been dancing with all over the neighborhood. So why didn't you ask me, baby? Didn't you think I could? Well, I know that the Boogaloo is out of sight, but the Shangri-La's a thing tonight. But if that was you and me, I thought, baby, I would have shown you how to do it right. Do it right. Uh-huh. Do it right. Do it right. Do it right. Ah. Twist it. Shake it, shake it, shake it. Shake it out, baby. Have a little loop-de-loop.
I can definitely see that. I mean, him, Walter, and Jason Segel's character, they both, or Gary, they both wear, you know, like the same suit. It's not the same as the Blues Brothers, but they wear like identical suits and everything.
Yeah, that's not where I went with them going, like, driving around, going on a trip, trying to bring the band back together.
They
go, the first stop they make is at, like, this tribute band, and that's, like, the first stop that the Blues Brothers make.
Yeah.
And then they go to Gonzo, who's, like, rich and works at, like, a really fancy place, just like they go to the restaurant where the guy's a fancy waiter. That's where I was going with it.
No, I mean, I get... You know, I get what you're saying there in the montage, but I feel like that montage of, like, getting everybody back together, whether it's, like, music or team, like, that's just, like, a you know, staple of, like, this type of film anyway.
Before the montage, though. You're still not with
them. No, no, I get what you're saying. The montage of going to pick everybody up and you know, I'm saying montage in terms of the whole scene, not, like,
can we do a montage of this argument so it gets to the end?
Jeremy, you're number one.
Maniacal laugh.
Interesting enough, the Blues Brothers would have been on my list of siblings, but I didn't even think about it for this.
Yeah, that was what our first thought was going to be. Yeah. Top five siblings.
We've done this podcast so many times, we forgot we had done a list. All right, my number one is the most obvious one, and it's my only sort of obvious one, but it's one I love, and it is The Sound of Music. Dead on arrival.
The hills are alive.
Well, you never want to see it. Listen to Lee sing it. Exactly.
I mean, they even end up in Vermont at the end of that movie, and I'm not a fan of it. You know me, I'm a fan of anything. I'm from the States.
They end up in Switzerland on the top of the Alps in shorts.
I'm saying that family in real life ends up in Vermont at the end of the end of their life. The Von Trapp family actually moved to Vermont.
There's Nazis in it. Come on, guys. There's Nazis.
I always think the end of that movie is funny because, like, I like that movie too, but I always think it's funny at the end of that movie that they're making their getaway and, like, they on foot climb to the top of the Alps and they're wearing, like, shorts and T-shirts.
Yeah.
I just
that's how
reality
check.
That's
how tough they are.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well,
people had to do a lot to escape the Nazis.
And you notice one of them was missing because they had to eat them.
They ate them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that, but good point.
Oh. My number one is also Lee's number one. It is the Blues Brothers.
Sorry. And it's still like we're singing all the music to the movies, right? That's what we're doing,
guys? A soundtrack to this podcast.
If we're singing all the music to the movies, I should be like, America! Yeah!
Yeah, we should definitely sell a soundtrack to this podcast where we all sing the songs to all the movies we talked about.
And we can do like a Get Your Film Fix holiday hits. We can have like a Christmas song podcast. Be great CD. That would be one of our best.
I'm dreaming.
I'm surprised White Christmas wasn't on your list, Jeremy.
Christmas, it was an honorable mention with snow.
Nice.
That's interesting.
This is a silly podcast.
Yeah.
Why is it silly?
Because we're doing silly things here.
We're just singing. Normal.
Yeah, that was a normal song that you just sang.
Yeah.
Any other honorable mentions?
I mean, like I said, West Side Story, Grease, Wizard of Oz, but, you know.
Lion King.
Dancer in the Dark, Lars von Trier.
Yeah, that would have been a decent one.
Little pretentious. An American Tale. Who doesn't like Somewhere Out There? Come on. Chicago, I like that movie. Moulin Rouge, that's a good one. Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
Best Picture.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Ugh, hate that movie.
All the classics.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast.
This very musical edition.
Yes, this very musical edition.
That's going to wrap us up.
Wrap us up.
I'm sorry, you guys
can go. I like how you used the word rap, and nice.
Gonna wrap it up.
That's something really good.
Oh, I was letting you guys do it because you guys seemed really into it.
Yeah, that's Yeah.
No.
I'm glad nobody listens to this podcast.
You're all set? You want me to finish wrapping
up? Chapin's not even going to listen anymore after this.
All right. So, yeah, thanks again for listening to the Get Your Film Fix podcast. We encourage everybody to go to our site, getyourfilmfix.com. You can check out all the articles and things we put up there. And then there's also a donate tab. So if you somehow liked this podcast and were like, hey, I want them to continue doing these singing randomly into microphones in a podcast, you can do so on our site where the donate tab is. Yeah, so thanks everybody for listening.
I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Enjoying my coffee.
I got some free love on the free love freeway. The love is... We did. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that played that at my wedding. That's right.